Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are on, what is this, January...
31st. Yep. You know, we got some
31st.
Comments.
31st.
We got some comments that people were excited because they knew we were having a show this week, and everybody was saying, "Oh my God, 2 weeks in a row! What are we going to do?"
We would go weeks and weeks without taking any time off.
I know. Well, we went. Actually, I think the only time we took off was really in this last few weeks was the only time in a long time.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, think about it. We're being paid by the organization. And we have a contract. We have a contract to uphold. So there you go. Anyway, we've got lots to talk about. Lots of happening. Big economic week. We're going to talk about that in a moment. But there's some earnings news out there. There's some things out of China. There's news on the U.S. front in terms of the political race that was done, the primary in Florida. But I thought we'd start with Amazon. Did you happen to see that they come out with earnings? This is similar to what happened last quarter. They had a drop in revenue, very much unanticipated and much lower than expectations, and the earnings were short. And more importantly, they said that their revenue next quarter was going to come in below their estimates that they had put out. Amazon has had that happen before, but it's getting a little bit tiresome.
Yeah, and it's surprising to me since I'm using Amazon more than ever.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it's funny that you mentioned that because I also have – you know, in the past, you buy something here, you buy something there. And lately, I've just been like, just buy it on Amazon. What's the difference?
Well, the shipping is one of the big deals. I mean, I ordered something on Sunday that said, well, I ordered it on Monday. I said, you can receive it on Tuesday by paying this much the next day, or you can get the free 2-day shipping for free. And I picked a 2-day shipping. It came the next day anyway. It was just like, wow, what service.
I mean, is that possibly some of the problem where their margins have been under pressure and they're still having to pay their contracts to the various transportation services? And then
it might because it's like the service has gone through the roof in terms of quality.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, but now what's happening is that the big discussion was there was the lack of any kind of real profit on the Kindle and on the Fire. But sales were down. I mean, the fact is sales were down. Amazon had a total of a 57% drop in profit. That's not a big number.
No, that's a huge number. That's a huge number.
And last quarter, they were at an all-time high, the stock, and they dropped down after the earnings, and they came down a bit, came back up, and then started kind of selling off here. And after hours, they were down about 10% at their worst, down towards 175, 176. I think closed at about 177 or so. There's going to be some of that buying coming in. But I wouldn't be surprised tomorrow if you see some continuation of the selling into the number because, you know, Amazon being a retailer, albeit an internet retailer, has a pretty lofty valuation. So that's going to be a concern to some of those that are playing the outlook game, you know, saying, hey, you know what, I don't mind a heavy PE, you know, but at the same time, I want to see some decent growth out there and some opportunity. And now it looks like they're starting to really have some problems, and their big spending has continued to really hurt them with their expansion. So Amazon is trouble. Then you add that to, you know, Google, what happened with Google recently. And then at the same time, you see the other side. You see how not so bad Microsoft did in the stock. It really did well. Apple obviously crushed it. And there's been some talk about, I don't know what you think about this, that the Apple phenomena may be, this is actually pretty crazy, but the Apple phenomena may be actually crimping sales in other places.
There's a lot of, I wrote a column in MarketWatch about the phone business, for example, being a zero-sum game, which is what you're implying. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of that. I think PC sales, I think the tablet, I think everything Apple does is part of a zero-sum market. There's no, if people are going to buy an iPhone, if they're going to buy another phone, it's going to be another iPhone. I mean, it's not like Apple is sharing the wealth.
Right. In other words, they're taking it from somewhere else. And the fact is that the Apple iPhone, the iPad, et cetera, they're expensive. It's not just a small item. It's not like when, you know, you have Amazon, they're selling all sorts of small items in, you know, massive quantities, of course.
By the way, the peg on Amazon is 5.8.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's a little high.
Yeah, so this is what I'm saying. You look at a growth at a reasonable value, and I don't think you have really...
Yeah, it sounds like Amazon should be selling for $50 a share, not 200 or whatever.
So the question is, what are they? And I think what's interesting is you have to wonder if they jumped the shark with the whole Kindle Fire thing. Mm-hmm. But that's when things start to really get a little bit soft for them.
Might be an interesting short. Maybe I'll put it on the list for this week.
Uh-oh. Mm-mm-mm. Now, talking about shorts... You see, Radio Shack, this is the same discussion that Radio Shack missed earnings horribly.
Yeah.
I mean, just absolutely just awful. Now, by the way, Radio Shack has been one of those stocks that has been constantly in play and talked about as a buyout candidate by private entities. And all. It's all the time. I mean, it's constantly getting squeezed to the high side because you see these things. But Radio Shack, I don't know if you've been in there. You walk in and there's a bunch of, I mean, phones. It looks like just a phone store in the front. And they have a few of their gadgets and their little things and all that, you know, where...
I still shop at Radio Shack.
Well, they have good things there. But you know what? Do you do a lot of shopping? You buy little crimpers and things like that.
Yeah, well, I go there maybe once every couple months.
And how much do you spend? $20?
Not usually a lot.
Yeah, because you buy little crap things. Now, that may be high margin, but it seems like you're probably scooting right past the phone area, which they put obviously... You know, it's like in the supermarkets. They put the candy at the low shelves so the kids can grab them.
Yeah.
Right? You know?
Yeah,
the great. Same thing. You go through, so you have to see the phones, look at them, and touch them. But they're just not making any money on them. And they're not even selling. They're blaming their profit problems on very poor sales on Sprint smartphones.
Hmm.
Which then rolled over into hurting Best Buy as well today. Shares dropped about 30% for Radio Shack.
Well, Sprint had I don't know what happened with them because they were bringing out these really good smartphones that had got a lot of attention. They didn't catch the public's imagination, I guess. Some of them were pretty big. Yeah, maybe they had a nice big screen. I don't know what the deal is with where the
fail point
was.
You have coverage issues with Sprint.
Well, there was a little of that, yeah.
You know, you have that. They had the 4G though. Sprint has 4G.
Yeah, but they call it 4G.
Right. But I think it was a big coverage issue and the fact that they were late to the party, very late to the party. You think about it, you had AT&T was, you know, first with the iPhone, and then you had the BlackBerries, and Verizon then came in with their junk they had. Then they got the iPhone, and then Sprint got the iPhone. They were kind of the last on the list. And you can't really sell for any less. And if you go to a Radio Shack or Sprint, you're looking for something maybe cheaper, a little bit more of a value-oriented play, and you can't. They're not selling anything for less money,
right?
So why bother?
So what's the point? Yeah,
what's the point? So and then if you look at Radio Shack, if you're the ones that are looking for your little pliers, extensions, little coax cable, that robot they have, or old-fashioned tape recorders, you know, that's the place you go for that. And maybe you're not really in the market to be buying a phone from them, a high-priced phone. So,
well, they don't give the impression that that's what they do. I mean, Radio Shack to me is still a place you go to pick up a wire or a cable or a connector.
Right.
Just the rest of it is, I don't know.
So anyway, that's kind of now a dead story, and who knows if it's going to be picked up, and I don't know why a private equity firm or anyone else would want to roll them up. Because it's kind of like, it reminds me of, not even Circuit City, but it reminds me of, there was a store called Planet something. Actually, I think Radio Shack owned them, now that I think about it. Didn't Radio Shack open a big, kind of one of the first Best Buys, like a Electronics Planet or something Planet?
Maybe. I don't, there's something, I remember some big stores in Texas that were opened by somebody, may have been Radio Shack. Yeah, I think you're
it
right.
Yeah, because it was Tandy.
That was a while ago. That was,
right.
I think, in the... early 90s. That was like pre-internet or something.
Right. And they were the coolest stores. You go in, they had all these really cool things and all that.
Like, but
Fry's, you
know, we have out here in California.
Right. I think it was owned by Tandy. Remember that?
Yeah, Tandy, which is Radio Shack.
So anyway, that bombed. They couldn't get that off the ground.
Jeez, I got to revisit that because I forgot all about those stores.
Yeah, something World or something Planet or something.
It was something.
Universe.
And now you're going to make me look it up while I'm chatting.
Electronic Universe, Planet Universe. Planet World Universe?
Shack.
It was definitely Universe.
Mega Stores, Texas.
Yeah, Tandy. Somebody out there is listening right now going, I know it, I know it.
If they only had a chat room.
Right, exactly. Something, it would be good if we were live, too.
Yeah, we could do that. Eventually we will.
Yeah, something universe. Anyway, we'll get to that in a second as you talk about that.
Pretty cool feedback.
Yep. As you're looking that up, let's talk about that. January was a great year for the stock market in the U.S. and around the world. As a matter of fact, it was in the U.S., it was one of the best Januaries in a decade or so. And what happened, if you remember, the clock struck 12:01 on December 31st, and all that terrible feeling for stocks and all that seemed to have disappeared. And everybody said, oh, I'm bullish, because they had the idea that maybe QE3 was on the way with the Fed or just some other kind of miraculous world event that would, you know, happen because the clock struck 2012 versus 2011. So regardless of what happened, we saw this amazing amount of interest every single time that the markets dipped down. Yesterday was a prime example of it, where the market was down 1.2% and ended down, I don't know, 0.3. And every day, if you look at it, at about, I guess about 11 o'clock or so, is when things start to turn around. That's when Europe closes. We're not worried about the bad news, the overspill of what's going on there. And markets just kind of start moving higher. Same thing happened on Tuesday as well. You saw this big up, then a big down, and then pre-market, and then a big down, and then it just started climbing up throughout the day. People are just buying because they get a little bit of a benefit there. Did you find the thing yet?
No, I'm not going to be able to find it. I can tell.
Mm. You're really going to piss people off. Somebody's just yelling at their.
They sent us an email.
Something.
I used to work at one of those stores.
Right. let's see. The greatest expansion of the S&P for 4 weeks, the most BEX gain. And then at the same time, on the other side of it, we had the last 4 days with the S&P ending down each day ever so slightly for four consecutive days, the most since November, which is really kind of hard to believe. I think there's only about probably 4 days or so in the month of January that the S&P was actually down. Can you believe that?
Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
It's just such a turn. So you have this kind of whole thing of China came out with their numbers tonight, their PMI, which was a little strange because it was in the expansion mode, 50.5. Anything above 50 is expansion, below is contraction, which is very contradictory to what the pre-announcements were when you look at the flash indices and other manufacturing numbers. And you still have to wonder, like you scratch your head, you know, first of all, how are they in expansion when we know that they're having such a hard time with the European situation? The global environment in Asia has slowed down, and at the same time, all their other manufacturing numbers are down, but the quote-unquote official government numbers showed expansion. It just almost seems...
fake.
Managed? How about managed?
Yeah, it's managed. They phony up these numbers, and the poor suckers who invest in these Chinese stocks are up to, you know, so you're up for grabs. You're just putting yourself out there naked. I think it's risky.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of people that question the Chinese numbers. And then you really got to question them when they go bad. You know, if you see a negative number, you know, like how negative really is it?
Yeah, how bad is it really?
Yeah.
This is the saving face number.
Right, exactly. We have a lot of economics coming up this week. We have, let's say, for example, the ADP numbers tomorrow morning, which is the jobs number. We have the jobs number on Friday, the all-important unemployment rate, and the jobs numbers and unemployment rate, and the U15 number. We have European numbers coming out on Wednesday morning. Lots of things happening there. So what I thought we'd do, we could talk a little bit about some economics if you wanted to.
Well, what specifically are you thinking of?
Well, we have a list of things we could talk about.
You want to go over the upcoming economic reports? Because we're going to for people out there listening, we're going to take all these. They're over a month, there's a lot of them. And we're going to discuss them in detail with or at least the definition of each one so people can get some sort of a clue and then kind of maybe pick and choose the ones they think might be worthwhile to follow. Because I think you can get a lot of information from these numbers. We tease this on the Dvorak blog, and we have a bunch coming up, and we're going to go over them one by one. beginning with personal income, going through personal spending, PCE deflator, PCE core, what they mean, when you should pay attention to them. The little indicator on the left of the chart that you have shows how often they come out. What does that mean?
That's the importance factor. How much it impacts markets.
Okay. Oh, okay. That's interesting. Okay, so we'll start at the top of the list, and then just go right down it. And it's not in alphabetical order.
It's in date order. It's an actual date order and time order. So let me just explain a couple of things about this. So, you know, obviously the economics of the country are very important when it comes to the overall health of business, industry. Now, that doesn't always – we always talk about this. It doesn't always reflect entirely the worth of a stock. So you may have a stock that totally runs contra to any particular economic number. But there are certain stocks that may have a great impact. For example, when you look at personal spending, well, you got to think, well, retail has something to do with that, right?
Yes.
When you look at the manufacturing numbers, well, you got to look at some things like maybe some of the industrial companies. When you look at consumer confidence, you're again back to retail, et cetera. You look at the mortgage applications, you're at the housing sector. So all these different things go directly at a particular side of the economy. Some of them have a broad impact on the economy as a whole. Some of them have a very negligible impact. You know, for example, the Dallas Fed versus maybe the Chicago Fed numbers. You know, one's more important than the other. And jobs are very important to markets. So when we look at these, they come out on a regular basis. Some weeks are very full. Some weeks are not. And we look at these to see kind of over time how there is a trend in which direction. And then the eventual result, if you see a continuing uptrend and indices indicators moving well, that's obviously a indication of the health of an economy, which then does in fact flow down into the stock market.
Now,
but it doesn't necessarily be; it's not instantaneous.
Do they normally come out on a monthly basis, or some, or there's some faster cycles?
There's some that are weekly. You have things like the oil inventories, natural gas inventories are weekly. You have initial claims that are weekly. You have monthly numbers like the jobs numbers, like the most things are monthly, and then you have some that are quarterly like GDP. So you may have – and then you have revisions. That's a whole different discussion.
Do they always come out on the same day?
They come out usually on the same – maybe not the same – the same – we'll say the same second Tuesday, you know, or something like that. It's usually the same time frame of a week. So right. Today is a Tuesday, the last Tuesday, and you saw consumer confidence come out. That's always the same.
So let's take a look at these and tell me what we're looking at here. Just run through them.
Okay.
So we have the personal income, which is a reflection of what? It's just the survey says 0.40%, prior 0.10%, and then you have a little trend line, which is not what we're talking about, but it's obviously going down. What does that mean? What is survey and what is 0.4%? Does that mean it's gone down or up?
Nope. Let me tell you what this means. So as we look at this table, we're looking at – let me just give you the big broad brush overview of this. So you have the date of when it's coming out, the time it's coming out, and what it is. Okay. So we have personal income on the 30th at 8:30 in the morning sharp. For what? For the month of December. Usually all these are lagged somewhat. The survey is the estimate by the analysts or by the economists, what the group of economists, the consensus believes is actually going to be the number that's going to come out. That's their, you know, estimate. The prior is the previous number that came out. So you can say, okay, well, we see that there was a 0.4%, which the survey says, which the prior was 0.1, which means the thought is there's going to be an uptick.
Okay.
Okay. Now, then you have the actual, which we don't have here because this was a listing of what's coming.
Right.
Okay. And then what you do is you could take a look just as a spot check. Okay, what's the actual? The actual came out, let's say, at a 0.5, which I think believe was the right number. And that was a little bit higher, and not only that, it was much higher than the previous. So you can see that the trend was higher when it comes out. So personal income is important because we're looking at what is the income on average growth over time. They talk about wages and things of that nature. And there's a little something you have to know here, that different organizations will post similar – these are government organizations – will post similar – numbers. So you're going to see personal income, and then you're going to have wages. So personal income comes out here, and then at the end of the week, you're going to have wages. Different division of the government, and it's based on a little bit of a different grouping and formula.
Hmm.
So they have a similarity, right? So one of them is GDP-based, and then maybe use a lot more manufacturers in it. One of them may be a broad-based look at personal income through manufacturer services and other means, and it's taken from a different set of data. So this one is personal income. So you say, okay, well, on average, personal income is growing. Well, again, you look at personal income, you say, well, if personal income is growing, well, that's good. The question is, what are people doing with that income, right? There's a couple of different choices. You could spend it, which is what comes out at the same time, or you could save it. I mean, I'm not sure what else you could do with it, right?
Well, save it or invest.
Yeah, but saving is investing.
It's the same thing, yeah. Right. Or you could throw it away. You could give it to charity.
Right. That's exactly right. Yes, you could do that. But let's talk about the masses here. the reality is, but spending is still charity.
Yeah,
you're not saving the money. Well, I guess the point is this. In personal income spending and savings, you have those choices. You're getting income, and what are you doing with it? You're either spending it on something.
Right. So if we see the next thing on our list, which is personal spending,
right.
The survey and the prior show up at as apparently they don't think anything's going to change much. And what was that number that did come out?
It was a bit less than the survey.
So it went down.
Yep. So spending went down, and
personal income went up, but spending went down. So that tells us that there's obviously people are being conservative and they're saving their money or doing something.
Exactly. And saving ratcheted up. Exactly right. So that's kind of the calculations. That's a zero sum game there.
Hmm.
So savings went up, which is a negative sign, because as you said, people are being more conservative, more concerned about things. Spending went down. Again, which is a little bit contradictory to some of the other numbers we've recently seen in terms of retail, but, you know, and income went up. So it's good that income went up, but the question is, where did it go? So then it was a negative reflection, though, that people are saving it.
Okay. So then we move on to PCE deflator, PCE core, and PCE core year to year. We got PCE
right.
deflator year to year, PCE core month to month, and then PCE core year to year again on the 30th, and this is a reflection. What I don't even know what this one. I don't know.
This is the personal consumption expenditures, and this is more of a spending again. Back to that again.
Who does this one?
PCE, I think, is BEA. I think Bureau of Economic Analysis. I have to look.
So every one of these is coming out of some different agency. In other words, all these government agencies that we're funding. And I suppose there are also colleges or universities, and then independents.
Yep. Independents, right?
Do these things.
And then, yeah,
we
like exactly.
We should do a Dvorak Horowitz. Well, anyway, go.
Yeah, we could do. Okay. Yeah, do an indication of listeners.
All right. Anyway, so what are we looking at here?
Well, this is again. This isn't as important, in my opinion. The one that comes out that's important is on Friday with the GDP. This one's important. It doesn't. We don't pay much attention to it, and you can see that's. Pretty much it's also the cost factors and, you know, how much people are spending and what the cost is and all. I wouldn't really get into this one. It's not really that important. And that's why you can see the importance factor is pretty light on it.
Yeah,
right?
I see that. And then even less important, apparently, is this the next one on our list here is the Dallas Fed manufacturing activity.
Yeah, all the manufacturing indexes are they're kind of important. There's, I don't know.
Why is this one not?
Four or five. It's just not the core. We look at Chicago as an important one. New York, somewhat. The Empire State is kind of important, but Chicago clearly, and also Philadelphia. Those are the ones that really have the hub of manufacturing. Markets don't really react and seem that as important because it's kind of what is manufactured there. It's more of a, you know, I guess energy state, et cetera, which really a lot of things don't get included in this. So it just I'm just telling you from my history of this, just doesn't seem to be that important to markets. Yeah, it's not meaningless, but it's not as important.
We'll move along.
Yep.
We'll skip
employment cost. Yeah, employment cost index is the cost, the factors of how much does it cost you to have employees. Right. What's the cost of this? And as it rises, it means that it's costing you more, which obviously goes hand in hand, if you think about it, with the personal income.
It would, it seems, also with the economy in general, wouldn't it? Because when things are heating up, it's going to cost you more to have an employee.
Right. Now, this is a quarterly number, if you can see that. It's fourth quarter. So this ends at the end of December 31st, not as current as maybe some other numbers. But it's important to look at the employment cost index. Again, some of these things, the personal spending, PCE, employment cost indices, those also are at the end of this week. The ones that are at the end of this week are more important.
Okay, so we move up to an important one next, which is the S&P. Actually, there's three S&Ps coming up. One is the S&P Case-Shiller Home Price Index. Mm-hmm. The S&P, this is what? This is the
Case-Shiller 20-city, month-over-month. And SA, when you see the word or the letters SA, it means seasonally adjusted.
Okay.
So they kind of make sure that things are, I guess, balanced this, on a period, period, period. And then
the
you have
the Case-Shiller Composite 20 year-to-year. Which is the 20-city year-to-year, and this is all home indexes?
Hmm? Now,
there's also the Case-Shiller?
Case-Shiller was some Shiller, Robert Shiller, and I don't know who Case is, was a organization that put together what was the overall average cost, we'll say, of homes.
And the average? S&P bought these guys out some time ago to use their
– Exactly. Okay. Yep. So this is the number when we looked – historically, housing prices are down, housing prices are down, right? This is the one numbers you look at. And they also have a 10-city. We like to look at the 20-city. We want to see a more broad-based approach to this. And month-over-month isn't as important as the year-over-year. The year-over-year is the numbers that you've always seen and looked at. When you want to look at things that are maybe getting better and see the silver lining, CNBC does this. They put the 10-city month-over-month up all the time. Hmm. And that seems to be a much rosier number somehow. Which then makes sense that CNBC puts it up.
Yeah, CNBC.
Okay.
Hello.
So, right. So, when we look at this, though, the one that we always look at is the important one that we've always looked at historically that everybody looks at is the 20-city, the composite, year over year. 1 year ago to now, what's the difference in a price of a home? And the reason you want to look at that is because you want to look at it on a smooth basis. You know, month over month, there's a lot of choppiness. You look at it from 1 year back to now, there's a lot of things that happen over that, and it kind of averages out a lot of the noise, and you see what's happening. Now, I will tell you that it's moved down again, and it actually came in worse this morning than was anticipated, down about 3.7%, I believe it was. The expectations were for 3.2. Prior was 3.4. So we're starting to kind of go backwards again in the pricing. And you know, the index is just a 100 – It starts. An index starts at 100, goes up. Let's say it was 170 at one point, 180, and now it's at 140. So it's kind of the constant value of a average home, if you will. I don't think it's really 140, like 140,000, but it's the 140 with a normalized number. Hmm. Now we look at this because the housing component of our economy is very important. You know, the big issue is really twofold, threefold, I guess: inflation, which is non-existent. Home prices and housing, the ability for people to actually buy a home and also maybe sell their home and, you know, the issue about foreclosures and all that. And then finally, you have the employment. That's the things that the Fed looks at. So what the Fed looks at, we want to look at. So then you have the Chicago Purchasing Managers Index. Important. This fell short also. This is kind of important, but not terribly important. It's called PMI, Purchasing Managers Index. And this is, you know, really what's going on from a manufacturing standpoint. The one that we look at on this Tuesday that comes out on the final Tuesday of the month is the consumer confidence. Now, there's different consumer confidence indices. There's the there's two of them that we look at. This one, which is a government-based consumer confidence index, and there's also the University of Michigan consumer confidence index. And that comes out. They come out regularly, and they do adjustments. This one came out light also. This one came out, I think, at 60. I think that 60? Was the number today. Yeah, it was supposed to be a 63. I think it came out at 60 today. It was definitely under.
Hmm. And what is it? Of course, that reflects which probably reflects itself in that personal spending number, which we talked about earlier.
Exactly.
If this number is low, then people are going to be reluctant to spend money.
Yeah, and that's the only problem with that is, and I agree with you there in theory. The problem, though, is that sometimes what people say is not what they do.
No, that's always not sometimes. I think that's right. Common.
And this is an opinion poll.
Oh, the consumer confidence is an opinion poll.
Right, of course. You know,
so they
what
talk
else is
a big,
it?
You know, they say, I think things are, and then they go out and buy stuff. Yeah.
Right. Or they think things are really, you know, good and they don't buy. So however you want to look at it. There's also things like the current indicator, the future outlook indicator. There's two, you know, different indicators that you look at, and you could break down consumer confidence. Like, how do you feel now and how do you feel about the future?
Yeah.
The NAPM Milwaukee, that's another purchasing managers, Milwaukee, which comes out. today as well, and that was also
APM,
like
stand for National
Associated Purchasing Managers. Yep. Mm-hmm. The one that is kind of interesting is the mortgage applications number. This is a weekly number.
Mortgage applications, and this comes from where?
The mortgage
brokers association or something like that.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Let me see if I can find that. I don't know. I don't store all these. Let's see. Do I have that? I don't have that. That would be Wednesday, MBA purchasing. So this would be from Mortgage Bankers Association.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay.
And this is it's a gauge of housing demand and maybe economic momentum. And people have to be kind of comfortable and confident in their own financial position to buy a house. So it's kind of like the purchasing application measures applications by mortgage lenders. Now, you know, it's kind of twofold, right? Not only is it how people feel, but it's also how banks feel. I can tell you a story that a good friend of mine is trying to refinance their home for a lesser value. In other words, get less of a loan. And I cannot tell you the hoops they're having to go through.
Yeah.
And it's almost comical because every time the hoop has gone through, they say, oh, you know what? We need this too. And then by the time
they're doing everything they can, this is one of the reasons I think these numbers are collapsing, because it's impossible. You know, if you're it's just impossible to move money around. I mean, these banks are just sitting on it.
Right. So this is important. It's every Wednesday this comes out. There's a kind of this number is like the pending home sales, because these are applications but may not go through entirely. Hmm. Does that make sense? You don't know. This is not the final. So it's kind of a precursor. So that's why it's an advance number. Hmm. So you have to consider that in all this. Now, the other thing that we do have coming out, which has gained a lot of importance lately, is the ADP employment change number. This is
put out by the guys who do the bookkeeping.
Yep.
The ADP, the
it does.
Yeah.
Automated data processors.
Yeah.
I think it's called. Yes, they it makes a lot of sense that a company that does all the payrolls and has such a big footprint in the payroll business puts out the an employment number. Now, for a long time, this was really like a secondary. It really wasn't. Nobody even looked at this. It wasn't even on the docket. But what happened was it became very reliable and very much correlated to the numbers that you'll see on Friday. And especially when you look at their non-government, their private numbers. So this got to be very important. And we look at this and you can kind of, in a way, make a determination of, you know, what is going to happen on Friday. So this is a number that you wait for until you make your prediction as an economist, as an analyst for your Friday number. You adjust it. Now, last month, there was about a 325,000 number that came out. And there was a lot of question about that because it was way over the top. That was just like, wow. And the question was, is this a temporary situation when it comes to holiday? You know, because a lot of times the December number for ADP was always hot,
yeah,
or has been hot. Now, I did some analysis. It was only hot the last couple of years. Before that, it really wasn't as much. But, you know, was there last-minute hiring done and all that? They're bringing it down from last month was 325 to the estimates are at 185. Now, there's also been times, I will tell you, that the correlation between the ADP and the BLS number on Friday have been terrible.
That's the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Right. So, you know, this is and you know, this and there's also the what's the other one I want to look at? There's another one I want to look at. Anyway, the point is that on this one compared to that one, it's not always perfect. So we'll see. But it is an important one. They will watch it. It's at 8:15 in the morning. It is pre-market. It does move markets, especially if the number is way off the mark in either direction. The other one that's important, we have construction spending month over month that's very important. That obviously tells us how much money is being spent on construction, which then folds right back into the housing market. Okay. And again, you kind of look and you can get a little feel for things because you know, okay, well, MBA mortgage applications, you have consumer confidence, you have the Case-Shiller pricing index, and you can kind of make a little bit of a picture from all this. That's really what I want to do. You want to put this all together and make a picture of what the economy is doing. And you can kind of, in a way, you know, as you go through these and you follow these, you can really develop quite the overall state of the economy by just watching these kind of things as they unfold. The other thing that's coming out tomorrow is the ISM manufacturing. Very important. Now, this, we look at this again. Now, how do you look at this? Well, we look at, okay, what was the Milwaukee, the Chicago, the Philly, the Empire State, the Dallas? Look at all these manufacturing numbers and purchasing managers index. And we can kind of get a flavor for what the total ISM, this is the Institute of Supply Management, what the total ISM manufacturing number is going to be. So right now they're predicting a bit of a better number than last month. Now, I will tell you, this was done, the latest estimate was done, I guess, yesterday or the day before. Now, that's before we saw the drop-off in a couple of these. So the question is going to be, are we going to see a 54? Now, the importance about this number is very simple. Over 50 is expansion, meaning manufacturing is expanding. Under 50 is contraction. That's it. End of sentence. Now, if you go from 25 to 35 to 45, well, you're still in a contraction zone, but it's not as contracting.
Right. It's not contracting as much.
But still contracting. That's important. It's not just a straight number. Now, the prices paid, obviously, is also important. And how much is being paid by the manufacturers to for their goods, the input? And it looks like there's going to be an increase there. Now, you look at the increase in pricing, that leads to possibly PPI, Producer Price Index, which then flows into CPI, which is Consumer Price Index. Hmm. Now, for those people listening that are like, what the heck at this point? All these acronyms and all these things that move in, it's mind-blowing. It's really, if you think about it and step back for a second, they all are very much interrelated. We're really dealing with manufacturing, which is, of course, involving employment. We're dealing with the consumer, who obviously buys the goods. And we're dealing with the cost factors of all this. Really, that's kind of all this is, right?
Right. Looked at from all kinds of different ways.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of sliced and diced and looked at, and that's kind of what's happening here. That's the whole ticket to all this.
So now let's go to
vehicle sales, very important for the car industry.
Yeah.
And this is an annualized number. This isn't monthly. So you look at a 13 million, it's annualized. Important for the car industry, important for the consumer, important for things like, for example, you see a really great auto number. Well, let me ask you, for you don't really study this. So if you see a great auto number, right, what else does that tell you about? Any thoughts?
Well, it would, no, not offhand, but I would just initially I'd say, well, it means people have extra income to spend. And so they're upgrading their car, which means they may have a new job. They may have to drive further. It may be because the cars are cheaper, or they have a cash for clunkers thing. You don't know. That would kind of scramble the number a little bit. It seems to me you wouldn't really know what was going on when you looked at the number.
Mm-hmm. Now, what stocks would it impact?
Well, it obviously impact the suppliers and the car manufacturers, and probably the finance companies.
Right. Also, steel.
Yeah,
steel stocks.
Steel. Yeah,
get steel stocks that would obviously do well with that. Possibly there's an offshoot. If you have a lot of new car sales, it may be negative to things like the second-tier auto retailers, AutoZone, Pep Boy, things
right.
like that.
Repair companies.
Yeah, repair companies. You may have and you're right. You know, the Ford and all those guys will do well with sales, of course. And, you know, you get them from around the world over time. Then let's see what else we have. We have, an issue to Challenger job cuts year over year. What's the percentage
of from
Challenger, Gray and Christmas? They're a survey company and, not only
job cuts year over year number.
They're looking at how much they look at a few things. They look at job cuts. They also look at major, what would you call it? Wholesale, employment. What's the word I'm looking for here? They do like large scale. So if a company like comes out and says we're going to fire 8,000 people, you know, they'll look at those as downsized. Right, but they're looking at these. They're also looking at these big numbers that come out that show big job cuts. So they have that also that comes out.
Hmm.
Let's see, kind of going down the list here. The RBC Consumer Outlook. We don't look at that really, but that's another Royal Bank of Canada. I believe that is number. Okay, then we have
productivity.
Now, this is, if you look at these are starting to get into some important things. We're back to getting towards the jobs Friday. So you have non-farm productivity. So it's non-farm. It's basically private and non-farm related. So you're talking about productivity numbers in the manufacturing. Okay, unit labor costs. How much again is costing? Same thing we talked about a second ago, but from a different angle. Initial jobless claims every single Thursday at 8:30. You brought the initial jobless claims. How many people are filing for unemployment benefits?
How many people are filing? Yeah, new claims.
Yeah, new claims, exactly. Initial jobless claims. And then you have the continuing claims, which used to be important, but who the heck knows, honestly, what this means anymore?
Yeah, because the numbers are phonied up.
Well, and not only that, you have multiple levels. So you used to have a very straight level. You know, you had a certain amount of time that you were on unemployment, and that was it.
Yeah. No.
Then they extended it. Then so there's the, you know, regular claims, and there's there was special claims, and then there was extended benefits, and it's like, oh, so you don't really know what that number is at this point. But, you know, it's important to look at that, and it's been trending down. Although the initial claims, one of the things you want to look at, and what we look at all the time, is not only the weekly number. So say, oh, we went from 377 to 370 or 350. Last week was a 350 number. 377, before that was 350. You want to look at the four-week average. You want to smooth some of this. Because if you look at the trend to the right, it's a little choppy.
Right.
So you want to see what's happening. Weekly is really too close to tell, and especially when you get around the holiday season, it gets really wacky because you know, people are on and off. But this is important because we're told that you really need to have less than about 200,000 or less to really show any kind of job growth. Now, at the height of this, I mean, you were talking, you know, initial job claims were I don't even remember what it was, 500,000-600,000 a week, or maybe 800,000 a week. And you want to see this number really drop, because that's the way you're going to see the overall – when the average drops and really starts coming down, you're going to see the potential for jobs growth on the NFP, the non-farm payrolls number that you'll see on Friday. And then things like Bloomberg Consumer Comfort, that's nice. It's weekly, but we don't watch it. Chain store sales by the ICSC, we don't watch that either, really. But then you have the big Friday numbers. This is a market moving. These are very important. These are bold. These are very important. You have the change in non-farm payrolls. Then you have private payrolls. And you have manufacturing payrolls. And these are all broken down. Manufacturing has been important because you want to see that manufacturing. You also want to see construction growing, because that goes back into the home, the side of the, you know, building homes, et cetera. And that happens. Then you obviously have the housing market starting to rebound a little bit. Private payrolls are very important. That's non-government. Government has been did a lot of hiring, and then they're doing a lot of firing these days. That deals with not only the federal but also the municipal governments. And then you look at the unemployment rate. We all know what that is. That's the thing that's slapped on the front of every newspaper, right? Now, there's a problem with this number. We've talked about this. You have the, you know, it's the number is there's different surveys. For example, you have the unemployment rate, but then you have household surveys. And you have, for example, the change in manufacturing and private payrolls. These are all, again, different takes on this, and you have to understand this. The basic issue here is that when you look at the unemployment rate and you see it going down, it's great just to look at a 7%, 5%, whatever it is. And why did President Obama say that we're probably going to be at X amount by a certain time? Because he knows that a lot of people are leaving the workforce. And when people leave the workforce, which is called the labor participation rate, the unemployment rate naturally moves lower. Even though there's more people unemployed. And it may sound counterintuitive, but it just is, so take my word for it. Now, you look at the unemployment rate, and you know, you want to see that coming down. Obviously, we're above the number that seems long-term sustainable, but you know, we want to see – we used to have 4%, 5%, but this seems to be the new norm. There was a new number that came out tonight by the Congressional Budget Office. And they're looking at about a 8.9% average unemployment rate through 2012. Mm. That was a report tonight. Not to mention a $1 trillion deficit that we're going to have again. Trillion. Did you see, by the way? I think it was Japan. They came out with quadrillion finally. They have a quadrillion.
Well, they got a multiplier with their yen being 100.
Yeah, but still, quadrillion. That's a big number.
Yeah, it is a big number. Can't even visualize it.
And to kind of finish this off on the employment, we have the average hourly earnings month over month. All right, how much are people earning on an hourly basis, more or less? And again, that's the same thing we talked about earlier with the personal income. We see the average weekly hours for all unemployment, so that's the total. We see the U6 number, that's that unemployment rate where we talk about from Shadow Stats, remember?
Well, yeah, that's the one. They even have another number above this, but this is the old calculation. Mm-hmm. For unemployment, it was also called underemployment, but it was essentially it's a combination of things. But that's kind of a closer to what the real unemployment rate is.
Right. Then we have the next day, the day after
also
the other
you have
one.
We average have. Weekly hours, how much work has been done, change in household survey employment. What does that mean?
That's a different calculation. It's a household survey, and how they calculate is different than the non-farm payroll survey. It's just a It's more of a it's a survey. So, you know what I'm saying? It's a more of a house-to-house call. You know, are you working? No. Then they have the ISM non-manufacturing. We used to call that the service index. It used to be called the service index. That's like your service-oriented employment.
Okay.
So, or the composite. So, you know, how much are restaurants doing? How much are service-oriented? So, again, 50 over 50 is expansion. Under 50 is contraction. Right now, we're looking for 53. Last month was a 52 and a half almost. And they're looking for an expansion in the ISM, which would make sense, actually. I wouldn't disagree with that because it's, kind of
being clear.
And then you have factory orders. That's kind of important, too. And factory orders go into, actually, that should be 2% there is the estimate. 1.8% was the last month. And factory orders are important because it talks about inventories and how many factory orders are coming in. Are retailers restocking? And that's the first line of the process of you get factory orders, okay, then you go into manufacturing, and then you get sales back to the retailers. How much are the retailers selling? And you look at the inventory to sale ratio. Are they, you know, are people buying? And it kind of, again, one giant circle there. So the first line is factory orders, right? You know, how, because if you have good factory orders, that means that you see that retailers or whoever is that is buying from the factories are feeling much better, that they have the outlook that there's going to be a better sales process, sales cycle. Therefore, they're happy about, you know, ordering. They're ordering different products. They're ordering things from the factories. So that wraps up just 1 week worth, by the way, 1 week of U.S. data.
Yeah. Well, we'll do another week, then another week, and we'll have it all in a, put it all in one file for people to listen to if they want
right.
to. Okay. Well, that's kind of running the show out. I guess we should look at our stocks.
Yeah. Let me mention something that this week we're starting tomorrow, or Wednesday, we're starting what's called Tweet Week, where I'm going to actually be tweeting a lot of investment ideas for the week just for the fun of it, have it out there. So, you know, we do this from time to time, have obviously various blog posts that go up on the Twitter and all that. But we're going to start Tweet Week, just 1 week from Wednesday to Wednesday, that we're going to actually have, if there